What problems are you going to solve? What discoveries will you make?
I intend to broadcast from this ship 24 hours a day until the day I die. And then for a couple days after that.
No one's written your destiny for you. You make your own future.
I've always lived for news and weather. Happy to dive into, especially the weather.
At Long Creek Youth Development Center, residents aren't behind bars, but despite its appearance, it is a juvenile detention center. Tonight on Blunt, in addition to our in-studio guests, we have with us two kids incarcerated in Long Creek, Corey and Salman, to discuss life in Long Creek. Also with us are Christine Tebow, an assistant district attorney, Ned Chester, a defense attorney, and Judge Keith A. Powers of the Maine District Court. I'm Jake Lichter.
And I'm Salman. This is a calling show. Please call and voice your opinions or ask questions to any of our guests. Our number here is 780-4909. That's 780-4909. You can also listen live at bluntradio.org.
Our first guest is Judge Keith Powers of the Maine District Court. Welcome, Keith.
Thank you.
So the first question we wanted to ask was, how does it feel being the final word in a kid's prosecution?
Well, you get used to it, I guess, after a while. I've been doing it 15 years, but it's an important responsibility. And it's not just my responsibility, because I'm obviously generally responding to what the defense attorney and prosecutor have recommended to me. So it's not just something that I'm thinking up on my own in most cases.
What was it like at first?
Well, I remember in general putting on the robe and walking into a courtroom and thinking, geez, I'm no different from the person I was 5 minutes ago, but all of a sudden everybody stands up and pays attention to what you say. So at the beginning, it does take a while to get used to the fact that when you say something as a judge, it tends to mean something different from what it meant when you said it as a layperson.
How do you weigh your options as far as keeping someone in jail or letting them go?
Well, we have the juvenile code that we all pay attention to. That's the state law that governs what happens to juveniles, and there are certain factors in the juvenile code that we need to consider. A lot of the factors include what happened at the time of the event. It includes what the history is of the juvenile in question. It includes the public interest and whether that needs to be protected. It includes what other options there might be available to deal with the situation. So there are a lot of factors that are being considered all at once before you decide what to do. I mean, in juvenile court, we do a lot of social work, essentially. We're trying to help somebody as well as protect the public and do some other things. But unlike adult court, we're really trying to solve a problem before the juvenile gets to be too old and gets in really serious trouble.
Do you act as a judge in juvenile court more or less than an adult court? Is that what you call it?
Yeah, I don't do much adult criminal work. There are six of us in Portland, and four of the judges do more criminal work. Two of us do other things. So I happen to be in juvenile court much more than I'm in adult criminal court.
What are your thoughts on keeping juveniles until the age of 20?
Keeping them at Long Creek, do you mean?
Yeah.
I mean, right now we have jurisdiction to kids to their 21st birthday if we need to. Some states have different age categories and maximums than we do. Right now, I don't often sentence somebody to Long Creek or Department of Corrections Authority to their 21st birthday, which is the maximum. That's mm-hmm. rare. If someone were 18, like the day after they committed an offense, so they're on the upper end of the age spectrum, they might get sentenced to their 20th or 21st birthday if it were serious.
How do you feel about committing kids at Long Creek?
Actually, Long Creek, as facilities go, is not a bad facility. I mean, it's made a lot of strides. The attitude there has changed over the years from one of being a penal institution to one that's trying to help kids in general. So I don't feel badly that kids are at Long Creek if they have to go somewhere. It's a good facility. It's not a place that I would like to send them if I had options at times, especially on short-time short-term, stays pending court, things of that nature. If we had another option, I would prefer to put somebody in a shelter, but we have lost many of our options, unfortunately.
How do you feel about that, Salman?
Basically, I feel like Long Creek didn't really help me. I feel like there could have been other options. But, I mean, I want to ask you, like, you know, you've been a judge for 15 years?
Just about.
And how has it changed, like, you know, therapeutically, like helping kids change?
Well, I just think the attitude since Rod Bouffard took over has become much more genteel, so to speak, trying to get the old guard to change their attitudes about what it's like to deal with kids' problems, trying to help people rather than trying to just exert control or power over them.
Who is Rod Bouffard?
He was the gentleman who came in to take over as the head honcho at Long Creek. He's right now doing some duty at the state prison, which has had its own issues, but he has been at Long Creek for a bunch of years and made a lot of changes that are good.
How has the juvenile justice system in Maine changed in your time as a judge?
Well, the statute hasn't really changed much. We did just have a statute come into play that deals with the competency issue for juveniles. In other words, are they able to assist their attorney in defending themselves, and do they understand the court process and how it works? This often applies to younger kids in the system. We did not have such a statute before, so that's a more enlightened way of looking at that one particular issue, so we have some guidance. In general, the law, though, has been the same. I think the change has been more, like I said, the attitude of the people who are in the Department of Corrections.
You think it's more positive?
I think it is. I think it's improved over the last several years. Ned Chester is here, and he's a defense attorney, and he certainly would have his own opinions because he's been involved for even longer than I have. So,
would you like to comment on that, Ned?
Well, yeah, I've been doing this since the 1980s, so I'm coming up on 30 years, and I think it's interesting to note that 70% of the kids who receive a summons from a police officer actually don't end up in court. So that's a dramatic change.
Why is that?
The summons goes and the initial police report goes to the juvenile community corrections officer, the probation officer, and the probation officer has an opportunity to informally adjust that case, that is to make some sort of require some minimal or no sanction for the juvenile, and if the juvenile complies with that, then it doesn't get sent to court at all. So 70% of those kids are getting diverted from the court. That's a dramatic change from even from 10 years ago.
That sounds like a very good thing that's going on, because that sort of diverts it from this crime and punishment thing to, like, committing a crime and then rehabilitating through other means than being sent away.
I think what we know, and certainly you all probably sense this, adolescents make dumb mistakes. That's just part of adolescence. And many of them don't need to be swept up into the juvenile justice system, mm-hmm. don't need to be brought deeper into the system. And so an informal adjustment is really an opportunity to take those young people who haven't committed serious offenses and recognize that they're not likely to commit a second offense and therefore keep them out of the system.
Great.
Judge Powers, how do you separate yourself from a case emotionally?
That's a good question. I think, in a way, you get used to it, candidly. You have a case, and you do the best you can with it, and then you move on to the next case. I do care about the kids. I mean, juvenile law is really my favorite aspect of the job, so I've taken a special interest in juvenile justice. I did drug court for 10 years when we had funding for that. So I do get involved, but candidly, I don't usually wake up at 2 o'clock in the morning thinking about it for whatever reason.
Why do you enjoy the juvenile justice so much?
Because there's a chance that you might actually hit a home run with somebody or maybe even a double or a triple, and not everybody strikes out in juvenile court. There are chances of getting a success story.
I have absolutely no idea what that means.
What I'm saying is you have a chance of doing some good.
Okay.
Adults have been at it longer, they may be more ingrained in their behaviors, and they may not be as susceptible to change. But kids, if you show some interest in them and try to help them, you might be able to hit the ball out of the park, whether you understand that one or not.
All right. This seems like as good a place as ever to go into our first feature made by a Long Creek resident, Reagan, about her experience going through court. If we have that ready.
Could you imagine going to court and not knowing whether you're coming back out of the courtroom with your freedom? It's stomach-turning just thinking about how much power the judge has over you. This is one of my experiences of going to court. When I got arrested, I was 14 years old and was running the streets, or at least I thought I was running the streets. I got 5 charges for the one incident that got me put in Long Creek for the first time. I had gone to my high school and beaten a boy up. I was acting very out of control, so the vice principal and a teacher restrained me to keep me from attacking the kid. I had assaulted 3 people in the one incident. The other 2 charges were for terrorizing because I threatened him on Facebook the night before, and the other was for disorderly conduct. 2 police officers had arrested my best friend and me on April 10, 2012. Neither of us had expected to come to Long Creek. I have had interactions with cops, but I'd only received a summons to court, but this time I actually got arrested. My friend and I were both nervous wrecks on our way to Long Creek. My best friend was crying and I was just pissed. We were acting completely out of control and singing very loudly in the back of the cruiser. Long Creek had its work cut out for the 2 of us. So we both got to Long Creek and they told us that we had to stand still while they patted us down and took off our handcuffs. I was being a wise guy and running my mouth. I should have played the same role as my best friend, shut my mouth, and did as I was asked. We were both told that we were not going to be strip searched. I first refused and said no way. I eventually caved in and got stripped of my clothes and told to take a shower to wash off my makeup. The shower was freezing and uncomfortable. I was given a pair of blue pants, a grubby pink t-shirt, a blue shirt to go over my pink shirt, brown underwear, tall white tube socks, and a sports bra. I couldn't believe what I was wearing, clothes that who knows how many other girls have worn. I had to stay up at intake for 2 days because the girl I had come in with were on separation per our probation officers. I took the wrong route and was being mouthy and acting up. I had to be locked in my cell because I could not behave. I was wicked rude to all the staff and faculty. I was being so mean to the people that were actually trying to help me out. The wait for court was a mess. I had been sitting up at intake for 2 days and hadn't talked to a kid in what felt like forever. I was ready to go and get the heck out of there. I was ready to go home. It was my best friend, this other kid I knew, and a few others beside me. We were all shackled and handcuffed by Cumberland County Sheriff's Department. They were much meaner than the Long Creek staff and wouldn't put up with any nonsense. I got the wake-up call when I was being mouthy to them, and they did it right back. Having the cold cast iron metal around your feet making you walk like a penguin is very uncomfortable and a hassle. And then you have handcuffs around your wrist. They do accommodate by handcuffing them in front of you. So you're sitting in this big, white, colored school bus with Cumberland Sheriff's Department and big letters on the side of the bus. You're sitting on the bus with a handful of random kids. They're probably thinking just like you are. They all broke the law just like you did, and they all just want freedom just like you do. It feels like forever while you wait your turn to see the judge. You probably are at court for a total of 3 to 3.5 hours waiting for each kid to go up. So you get bored and talk with the other criminals. Not the best place to pick up friends. There's a double-sided mirror where you can see yourself and the guards can see you, but you can't see them. So you can stare at yourself and they're laughing at you, make faces in the mirror. While you're sitting in the beat-up room, you see people's names carved in the benches and walls. I remember I carved my name in the bench with my shackle chain. The guard saw me on camera and said, if I do it again, then I'll get blackboxed. It sounds like angels singing when the guards unlock the cage and scream your last name. You go up to the door and they bring you to an elevator with 2 guards up to the courtroom. The guards open the door to the courtroom and you see the DA and your lawyer across from them. Your parents are in the rows behind them with disappointment all across their faces. It makes you feel like a total loser. Then we take our seats. Then the judge asks the DA to state their case. After listening to the DA, my lawyer then stands up and starts stating my side of the story. When the judge looks at you after the long, agonizing wait to hear what's going to happen to you and says that you're not getting released, it's like a bullet that hits you where it hurts. You just want to scream at your lawyer, the DA, and the judge, all for different reasons. You want to scream at your lawyer because he didn't get you out the DA because he was saying how bad of a kid you were and you weren't safe out in the community. That Long Creek is the best option for you. The judge is the one that has all the power and the control over you and your freedom. It is overwhelming and you just want to scream. As you walk out, as you walk back to the door, you turn to see your parents crying and all emotional. And all you can do is look down. Going to court can be a scary thing, especially when you don't know what's going to happen. It's a lot of pressure on you, too. You can feel so alone and nobody's on your side because your parents don't want you home because you're acting too out of control. The DA is trying to lock you up. One thing you know for sure is that you came into jail. You came into jail with yourself, and you'll leave with yourself. Someday you will get your freedom back, and it's not going to matter what the DA wanted or what the judge ordered.
Sit in my room at nighttime. I would think about what I want to do when I get out, like how I plan to get.
All right, that was a piece called "Going Through Court" by Reagan and Salman. I wanted to ask you, like, how did your experience going through court? How was it similar to Reagan's?
It was stressful, basically, you know, not knowing what's going to happen and basically not knowing the outcome and just sitting there for a long period of time just waiting to see what's going to happen. It hurts a lot, so. And when you get turned down to go home, it's really painful.
So I wanted to ask Ned and Keith, if you guys have children, and if you do, how has your profession affected your parenting style? I guess Ned first.
Well, I think I was always, I mean, one of the reasons I practiced juvenile law from early on was because I found it to be interesting and felt a certain empathy for adolescence. Having a child reach adolescence and watching how they responded to situations, I think, certainly increases your level of empathy for the difficult times that are presented when a child comes into the juvenile justice system. I thought Reagan did a really nice job of talking about how traumatic it is, mm-hmm. And those of us in the system, I think, get inured to that. I thought she did a really nice job of, and I do this, you know, every week. I'm down in the holding cell talking to my clients, and I think I have a pretty good sense of what goes on down there and what it means to my clients to be held like that. But she's heightened that awareness. It is an extremely traumatic event for kids to be brought into that holding cell, taken up to the courtroom, taken back down to the holding cell, put into that bus, and have to go back and be strip searched.
Yeah, I thought she used really powerful imagery, especially in the holding area before the courtroom and then the courtroom scene, like describing her parents and how they felt and how it's a pretty common and shared experience between kids. Like most kids, I'm sure, just have like a powerful resentment towards the people when they get put away. I feel like it's very universally understood description.
Well, and I think what we know about adolescents is that they also have a heightened sense of right and wrong. And so I think that plays into the emotions.
What about you, Judge Powers?
I have two kids. One was probably 15 when I started the job, and one was 21. Mm. So they were right around that age for the kids I was dealing with. So I do think it made me look at their lives a little differently. Fortunately, they weren't in the kind of trouble that we're talking about, mm-hmm. So they were good, behaved kids for the most part. But you know, I think parents often don't understand the pressures that kids are under. They can be pretty harsh. They can say things that are pretty negative. And sometimes I understand you have to discipline your own kids. But kids usually want to be supported and want to be loved, and they need somebody to say something positive about them. So I tried to remember that when I was being a parent, although I wasn't perfect.
If you're just tuning in, this is the Long Creek Youth Development Show on Blunt Youth Radio. We're here with Judge Keith Powers and Ned Chester, a defense attorney. And my name is Jake Lichter, and my co-host
Solomon.
And this is a call-in show. Our number here is 780-4909. So if you have any questions for either of our guests or me or Salman, or any comments that you want to make, you can call us. The number again is 780-4909. And I wanted to ask you, Judge Powers, do you feel that you're wrongfully disliked for making your decisions?
I really don't know what people think about me for the most part. I just do my job. I'm not there to make friends, to be honest with you. I'm trying to do what I think is right, try to be fair. It's fairly common for one side in a case not to be pleased with what a judge does, and sometimes both sides. And that's part of the process. There's not much we can do about it.
I'd like to ask you, have you ever had a defendant who didn't speak English? If so, how'd you handle that?
That's a good question. That has definitely changed since I started. We have many more kids who do not have English as their primary language, and the use of interpreters has become very, very common. It can be difficult if we don't have a great interpreter. Usually we do, but occasionally you start to wonder if you're getting an accurate translation, which creates problems. But for the most part, we either use Language Line on the phone if we need to, or we have a live interpreter. That's the first choice, and they do a good job almost always. So I feel that I'm getting an accurate translation, and we can understand each other. You just have to go a lot slower.
I think we should go into our second feature as we're almost coming to the halfway point in our show. This is a feature about doing programs at Long Creek made by Salmon. So let's listen.
Getting locked up as a teenager is hard to deal with. One of the hardest choices we have to make while incarcerated is whether we want to change or not. At Long Creek, there are basically two options. Residents can choose to do a program which will allow them to leave the facility earlier than they have to. Residents who do not want to change and do a program by discharge, which means they serve their original sentence rather than get out early. The percentage of residents either writing discharge or doing a program is 50-50. I spoke with a resident named Moses about his decision to do a program. What motivated you to do a program rather than just write discharge?
Because I would like my freedom back, and I have stuff I need to do when I get out there, and it can't be done while I'm in here, and I don't want to waste any time.
Have you ever wanted to write discharge before?
Yeah.
What made you change your mind?
Knowing that I can get out before, and all the things that I can complete before I discharge, instead of just staying here until I discharge and then completing it.
Can you explain to me what your program consisted of?
My program consisted of counseling, drug counseling, anger reducement counseling, school, high school.
Is there a moment where you decided that your attitude is going to change and that you're going to do a program?
When I got my high school diploma. I got my high school diploma, and after I got that, it motivated me to continue more in my education career. And I didn't just want to stop at my high school diploma, so I signed up for college, and now I'm just waiting to get out so I can start.
Is there anyone here, like, you know, a staff, a resident that motivated you to do a program or helped you do a program?
You have to motivate yourself because most of these people are just here to do their job. So you have to motivate yourself, and you got to be your own judge.
As you can see, residents who do a program are more likely to succeed. In my opinion, when you get a chance to do a program, it's basically a second chance. Everybody should take advantage of it. From Long Creek Youth Development Center, for Blunt Youth Radio, this is Solomon.
All right, that piece was called Doing a Program by Solomon, who we have with us in studio right now. Great work on your piece. And I wanted to ask you, why do you think a kid wouldn't choose to do a program if they're given that opportunity?
Basically, when you do a program, you kind of have like a case plan review of what you have to do in order to get rehabilitated, and as far as like getting back into the community, and that takes time. Like, you know, they could tell you, hey, your program is going to be like 9 months, and say a kid gets about 10 months, he's going to be like, well, there's no reason for me to try if I get out in 10 months no matter what. So I mean, that's why most kids don't do a program, because they have short commitments.
Did you have any question of whether or not you should do yours?
I mean, I have a long commitment, so I'm trying to get out of Long Creek, so I don't plan on sticking around.
Mm-hmm. And can you tell us a little bit about your program?
My program kind of started out bumpy, you know, had a few issues along the way, but I mean, it's going pretty well right now. Should be back in the community soon.
That's good to hear. What did you, Ned and Keith, what did you guys think of that piece?
You know, we don't know that much about what happens after somebody gets committed. So it was interesting to hear. I think what we know is that, you know, no program is exactly right for every kid. So I think Long Creek makes an effort to tailor the program to the identified needs of the resident. But they obviously have limitations and they can only do, you know, they can't necessarily really tailor every program to every kid. And I think it's like any other organization. You know, you've got some people in there who are really there to make the organization work, and you have some people who are less motivated. The same is true of the residents. Mm-hmm. Some are ready to turn things around and see this as kind of a wake-up call. Others just aren't ready for that. So it is certainly a much better, a much more effective, a much more humane, thoughtful institution than it was 15 years ago.
You want to speak?
Just briefly, I would have thought more than half the kids are doing a program. That was a surprise to me, if that's true. I've been to Long Creek, you know, to look at it, but I'm not there on a regular basis, mm-hmm. obviously. It's a chance where you can prove yourself. It's like being on probation, only it's more serious because you're already at the facility. But it doesn't have to be a totally negative thing. I mean, you're there to learn something and to change your behaviors, and you can impress yourself and your parents and the JCCO and the DOC people if you will give it a shot.
Do you guys think that Maine's legal system for juveniles is fair on a whole? I know that's a loaded question, but...
Well, I'm not somebody who's familiar with the details of other state systems because mm-hmm. I've never been involved in them, so it's hard for me to compare. I do know that, as I said, Long Creek has been, you know, evaluated and found to be a pretty good institution compared to other places. In terms of the law itself, I think it's somewhat of a patchwork of different things that are put together that don't flow seamlessly together. It could probably be improved a little bit. Maybe a review of the statutes would be due soon so that we could see if there would be some changes that might make some sense. Some of it's a little confusing. But overall, I would think that Maine is a generally enlightened place because we do care about the kids and are trying to make things better for them, not just stick them away someplace as punishment.
Judge Powers, as far as like kids doing programs and getting out and say they do well, how do you handle them if they request like early discharge or?
Once the kid is at Long Creek under DOC, Department of Corrections authority, I really don't have anything to do with that. It's up to the folks over at Long Creek to decide when somebody gets out. I do detention hearings, which is what was discussed earlier when the young woman said she found out then and there she couldn't go home. That's different from being sentenced to Long Creek. That's a more immediate problem that usually lasts a short period of time. But in terms of an actual commitment, once I send somebody there, I'm not actively involved.
Let me just respond to that, the issue about Maine's system. I go to National Juvenile Defender conferences on an annual basis. And as much as I think that the Maine juvenile justice system has places it can improve, I have yet to run across a juvenile justice system in another state that I think is as effective as ours is. So,
that's good to hear.
Have you formed any relationships with your clients who are incarcerated?
I try to check in on my clients when they're incarcerated. I try to stay in touch with them. I think it's important for them to have a sense that somebody on the outside is at least keeping an eye on them. But the opportunities are pretty limited.
All right.
Do you think that would be a good thing to do?
Yeah, I think it would be good to keep in touch and see how they're doing. It would help them.
Have you experienced anything like that?
No, not really.
Did you have a court-appointed attorney?
Yeah.
All right, well, it's coming up on 8 o'clock, which means that it's time for our break. So when we come back, we're going to be speaking with Christine Thibault, who is an assistant district attorney. We'd like to thank our two guests, Ned Chester and Judge Keith Powers, and thank the people who made features, Salmon and Reagan. And,
you have anything to say? See you after the break, yes.
Yeah, thanks for listening.
I had been sitting up at intake for 2 days and hadn't talked to a kid in what felt like forever. I was ready to go and get this.
What you gonna do? What you gonna do when they come for you? When you were 8 and you had bad traits, you go to school and learn the golden rule. So why are you acting like a bloody fool? If you get hot, then you must get cool. Bad boys, what you gonna do? What you gonna do when they come for you? Bad boys, what you gonna do? What you gonna do when they come for you? You chuck it on that one, you chuck it on this one. Your brother and you chuck it on your sister, you chuck it on that one and you chuck it on me. Bad boys, what you gonna do? What you gonna do when they come for you? Bad boys, what you gonna do? What you gonna do when they come for you? Bad boys, what you gonna do? What you gonna do when they come for you? Bad boys, what you gonna do? What you gonna do when they come for you? Nobody now give you no break. I'm gonna give you no break. Not even your eyes, you're not give you no breaks. Hey, hey. Bad boys, what you gonna do? What you gonna do when they come for you? Bad boys, what you gonna do? What you gonna do when they come for you? Bad boys, what you gonna do? What you gonna do when they come for you? Bad boys, what you gonna do? What you gonna do?
Tonight, patchy fog after 11 p.m., otherwise mostly cloudy, with a low around 52. East wind 5 to 10 miles per hour. Tuesday, partly sunny, with a high near 62. North wind around 5 miles per hour, becoming southwest in the afternoon. Tuesday night, a 50% chance of showers after 10 p.m., areas of fog after 2 a.m., otherwise mostly cloudy with a low around 51. Southeast wind around 5 miles per hour. Wednesday, a 40% chance of showers areas of fog before 8 a.m., otherwise cloudy with a high near 56. Wednesday night, cloudy with a low around 49.
You're listening to WMPG and W281AC Gorham, Portland. This is Blunt Youth Radio.
All right, welcome back. I'm Iris Sangiovanni, and my co-host tonight...
Corey.
And as you... For those of you tuning in, our show tonight is the Long Creek Youth Development Center. So Corey is a resident there. In studio with us tonight, we have, again in studio with us right now, we have Judge Keith Powers of the Maine District Court. So thank you again for being here.
Thanks for having me.
And we also have Christine Tebow, a prosecutor for the juvenile court.
And I'd just like to remind our listeners that this is a call-in show. So if you'd like to call with your opinions or questions, please do. The number is 780-4909. Again, that's 780-4909. So thank you for tuning in. All right. So I think to begin, we were going to play your piece, Corey, which talks about tattoo removal. Do you want to add anything?
Yeah, basically the reason why I did a piece on tattoo removal is because recently I've started the process to better my, you know, future job force and employment and stuff like that. So I think it's a good change. Basically, I had a big tattoo on the side of my neck, and, you know, it's not very good for the future as far as like employment wise. So I'm currently doing process treatments on that. So I did a piece on that.
All right. So let's go ahead and listen to it.
Getting locked up as a teenager is hard to deal with. One of the hardest choices we have to make while incarcerated is whether we want to change or not. At Long Creek, there are basically two options.
I've always wanted a tattoo. One day I met some guy that does tattoos and I hit him up and I got one right on my neck. It was an impulsive decision on my part. I really wanted the tattoo and so I went through with it. I was really into motocross at the time, so I got a Fox Racing logo tattoo, which is a motocross company for those who don't know. I had it for about 6 months or so and I liked it. I then came to a juvie center and constantly got very self-conscious about it and thought about how it would affect me in the future. I looked over the pros and cons, and I made the decision to get it removed with a laser. I asked some of the staff with tattoos what their perspective was on the tattoo removal process. I got some responses from Mr. Gagnon and Mr. Baker of Long Creek Youth Development Center, where I'm staying. Why do you suggest I get my tattoos removed?
First of all, I don't suggest anybody get tattoos on the side of their necks. You want a tattoo that you can cover up and still look professional while still being able to enjoy the body art. The Fox Racing tattoo on the side of your neck looked awful. And so trying to get a job when you got out of Long Creek would have been next to impossible. And I'd like to see you be successful. So, I mean, I think you could do more than flipping burgers. And having a tattoo like that on the side of your neck, that's pretty much what you're going to be limited to.
I don't think I would necessarily say that you need to get tattoo removal. It's a personal preference, something that you'd have to, a choice that you'd have to make yourself. Because when you select a tattoo, it's a personal choice most of the time, and getting it removed also should probably revolve around some kind of personal choice.
Have you suggested to any other kids at the facility to get their tattoos removed?
Yeah, absolutely. Anytime I see a kid that has tattoos that I think is going to affect their future, I definitely recommend that they either get them removed while they're committed or if they get out. There have been kids that have had neo-Nazi swastikas and things like that that have definitely encouraged them to either get them covered up or to get them removed. But I think that anything that's visible that you can't cover up, you should definitely think about getting removed.
The only tattoos that I would suggest that somebody get removed would be ones that were gang affiliations if they weren't involved in that lifestyle anymore. Things like teardrops on their face, things like that that might hurt them later on in life if they decide to, you know, start going a different path.
Have you ever had any tattoos removed?
I've never thought about it. I've never had any removed either. All the tattoos I have, I've waited a long time to get because I wanted to wait for the right artist, and I didn't want to have anything that I would later on regret. So, for the most part, I'm happy with all of my tattoos.
I've thought about having tattoos augmented or changed, but I've never thought about having a tattoo removed.
Did you regret any of your tattoos?
I don't regret getting any of my tattoos. There's tattoos that I will cover up, but for the most part, the art is really well done, and they all have a meaning to them. So I'll get some covered up, but I won't have them removed.
I wouldn't say regret is the right word. I would say more like with a maturation process that I've gone through, I've thought back and been like, wow, that was kind of a stupid thing to have done. But at the same time, you know, those were the choices I made at the time, and it's kind of the building blocks of your life. You know, I would definitely have some covered up or changed, but I wouldn't have any removed.
So basically, after I interviewed the staff that work here, I still had the same perspective to go through the tattoo removal process. So I had my first laser treatment done a few weeks ago, and it wasn't as bad as I thought it would be. Pretty expensive process, but, you know, it's going to be worth it in the long run.
All right. So again, that was Corey's piece. But before we discuss that, we have a caller, Brian, from South Portland. Do you have a question or comment for the show?
Yes, good evening.
Good evening.
Yes, calling regarding the young lad up there at the Development Center, my own former alma mater, 64 to 67, as it was then known, the main state school for boys, later to become the Boys Training Center. The names were changed. But nevertheless, back in them days, it was considered body mutilation. Not only by the state, but by the American Psychological Association, Handbook Number 1 in particular. Tattoos were frowned upon in society. But to get to the crux of the biscuit, you look about in the community, they call it body art now.
Mm-hmm. Well, thank you. Thank you for your comment. I think you bring up a good point, especially when we're talking about the workplace. Tattoos, especially when they're visible, are often frowned upon. So thank you, Brian, for calling. Again, I want to remind our listeners, if you're just tuning in, that this is the Long Creek Youth Development Show. And with us in studio, we have Judge Keith Powers and Christine Tebow. And I'm Iris San Giovanni.
I'm Corey, resident from LCYDC.
All right. So for both Christine and for Judge Keith, hearing Corey, you know, going through the process of tattoo removal and how he's working to improve his life, is that, you know, satisfying to hear that? You know, what are your thoughts?
Well, excuse me. My thought is that Corey's piece really reflects what we've learned about adolescents. They are impulsive, and they don't often think about how their behavior is going to impact them a year from now, 2 years from now, 5 years from now. And so I think what his piece illustrates is that kids do things that they think are cool at the time, but later learn through other people with more experience and wisdom that, boy, maybe that is something that's going to be an obstacle for me in the future. Tattoos are certainly more socially acceptable now than they were 20 years ago. Still, it's going to limit his ability to be really successful and to reach his full potential. Whether we like it or not, society still does judge us by how we look and how we dress. And so even though those of us who know Corey might say, gee, he's a really great guy, he's a bright guy, the truth is a lot of people are going to look at the outside and come to a snap decision about him based on that. But I do think it's really good to hear that he has plans for how to maximize his potential as an adult.
I share what Christine says. My generation has aging spots, not tattoos. So it's a whole different world. We didn't even think about that growing up. So I think they're relatively accepted as long as they're in the right place and they're not what somebody might call horrific looking and overly dominating. So I think we're tolerating those kinds of things, but certain employers certainly aren't going to want to see them.
And so, Corey, tell us, like, was it, you know, being a resident at Long Creek that influenced you to take such action? And how are you able also to get the resources to do so?
I'm going to say before I came to Long Creek, I liked my tattoos and, you know, I was all about them. And when I came to Long Creek, I still liked them, but I got a lot of comments, obviously, from the kids. I mean, there's jealousy or there's kids that just want to hate for no reason and all that. So it kind of got me thinking, you know, is this, you know, just kind of like a little, should I do something about it? You know what I mean? Like cover it up or get it removed or something like that. And then one day, one of the staff that worked there, you know, they brought it to my attention that, you know, this place removes tattoos for free. You should really look into that since you're getting committed, and committed means basically you're going to be there for a year or two. So I was like, oh, it's a good idea. And, you know, I put it in the back of my head and just proceeded with, you know, my time. And then a few months later on, I was like, I thought about it again and I was like, you know what? I'm probably going to start to, you know, try and get a job here pretty soon and get on my feet and, you know, get successful and, you know, move on with my life. And I really think that, you know, that staff that told me that I should get that removed has a good point. You know what I'm saying? Like, it's right on my neck. And for future jobs, obviously bosses don't want to see people come mm-hmm. in with ink all over their neck, you know? And I know a lot of people say, oh, don't judge a book by its cover, but, you know, 95% of the bosses, they're going to judge you because you have a tattoo on your neck, whether they are believing in it or not. You know, it's just, they think differently of you, whether they say they do or they don't.
Yeah, and so. It's like, it's unfortunate that it's like that, but it is.
Yeah.
Christine, just, you know, to talk about, you know, being the assistant district attorney, do you consider that, you know, a civic duty? And, you know, what do you enjoy or find important about your job?
I do see myself as, first and foremost, a public servant. My role in court is to, one, to tell the judge what seems to have happened based on the evidence, but also to advocate for victims and for the community at large who have certain expectations about how kids are going to behave. And as you heard earlier, juvenile delinquency is normal to a certain degree. But when you cross that line, society expects that laws will be enforced and that kids will be treated fairly but held accountable. So I see my role as really being a public servant where I speak for the community at large that has expectations for victims, sometimes for parents who are concerned about their kids' welfare as well. I do see it as a civic duty.
Mm-hmm. And I had a question for Judge Powers. Do you ultimately make the decision of the sentencing when it comes to juvenile court?
It depends. Most cases involve an agreement between the prosecution and the defense attorney about what's going to happen, and I have to approve that agreement. It is up to me. In certain cases, they can't agree, and then they will give me their respective positions, and I'll have to decide what I think an appropriate sentence is. So I am in charge, but in most cases, I'm getting some suggestions from both sides as opposed to just coming up with it myself.
And because, Christine, you represent the greater community, you know, Judge Keith Powers, do you take the district attorney's opinions into, you know, does that have more influence on you?
She's hoping I take it into account. I've heard Christine Thibault make hundreds of recommendations for sentencing, so it's common for me to listen to what she has to say. I mean, I listen to both sides. And as I said, most times, several months into a case, the two sides agree on what's an appropriate resolution of the case. It's the exception when they don't, when I'm really thinking about that more on my own, although I do get input from them, but mm-hmm. they just can't agree. So I definitely take into account what both sides tell me.
Mm-hmm. Is it often that the DA and the prosecutor do not come to an agreement?
Christine could probably give me a a percentage that she might think about. It's the exception, not the norm. Most cases are agreed to. And I don't always go along with their agreement, but usually I do. So there is a small percentage where I might not like what the agreement is. Overall, I would. So I would say many more agree than don't.
Why do you think they don't agree?
Well, there may be various factors. Again, Christine can speak to that better than I, but there might be a victim who has particular input into the case that just isn't going to be happy with what's going on, and she might feel that that's important. There might be public safety aspects of this. There might be a disagreement about how serious the person's history is and other things like that.
All right, we're going to take this time to, we have a caller on the line, Joanna from Portland. Do you have a question or comment?
Yeah, I have a question for Corey.
Yep.
Yeah, I'm wondering, since you've gotten to Long Creek, have you, did you make any friendships or relationships that you'll keep, like, once you leave, or people that you're really close to?
Definitely not. I mean, that's one thing that I've thought about a lot, but from a lot of people, you know, I've been led in the direction to not continue in with that relationship on the outs, because it could proceed with negative behavior, because I mean, we both did, you know, similar things to get in there, and there is a small chance, or chance anyway, that we could, you know, fall into that active behavior again and get back into it. So honestly, I don't think I will get back with anybody that I've been here with. No.
Yeah. All right.
Thank you for calling.
Yeah. Nice job, guys. Thanks.
Thank you.
Bye. Okay.
I had one question for Judge Powers. What's your perspective on court-appointed lawyers and lawyers that get paid from their client to do so? Do you think that the court-appointed lawyers aren't as likely to work as harder to get them out?
That's a good question. Most lawyers in juvenile court are court-appointed.
Yeah.
Because most of the families can't afford to hire a lawyer. So if you can afford to, you get your own.
Mm-hmm.
Like Ned Chester would be hired as an attorney sometimes, the gentleman who was here earlier.
Mm-hmm.
Or he could be court appointed, either way. So many of these lawyers are the same lawyers. It's just a question of whether they're being paid by the state a small amount, which is hopefully going to increase, or they're being paid by the family of the kid involved. So the people who are most effective are the ones who work hardest at the job, who know what the law is, who know what programs are available for kids, and it really doesn't make any difference, in my view, who's paying them. The people aren't, it's not like there are two separate categories. These are only hired lawyers on one hand and court appointed on the other. There's quite an overlap there.
I have a question for Christine, but Judge, you can answer as well. Since when making these decisions and, you know, the defense is found convicted as guilty, the juvenile and their families perhaps are going to be very upset. Like, how do you deal with that sort of emotion?
The emotions that I deal with are, frankly, more with the parents. I'll be honest with you. In juvenile court, it's not very often that it's a surprise that the juvenile is adjudicated, because, frankly, most of the time they admit their behavior. The issue is what's going to happen as a result of that criminal behavior. Mm-hmm. And sometimes the parents are very pleased that the state is taking action, and some parents would rather have their kids at Long Creek than on the streets, where they're afraid they're going to overdose with drugs or end up being prostituted. So there are a lot of dangers that the parents sometimes would prefer be avoided by having their son or daughter at Long Creek's. But still, that's a heartbreaking reality to deal with. And so oftentimes I never get to talk with the juveniles. They have their attorney who represents them. But I do deal with the parents, and sometimes it is emotionally very distressing,
mm-hmm.
because it's heartbreaking.
All right. Well, in the sake of time, we do still have a couple more features that we'd like to listen to. The first is actually a piece that I did myself. In the spirit of tonight's show, I wanted to talk to a younger sister. She's 9 years old, and I wanted to get, you know, a younger perspective on what punishment is. So let's go ahead and listen to it.
I remember my peers and I used to fear staying inside for recess or having the principal call our parents as punishment. But soon that turned to failing grades and detention. And now, as my peers and I become adults, we fear getting fired from jobs or serving time in jail. It's interesting how the older one gets, the more severe the punishment. The other day I sat down with my 9-year-old sister, Jade, to discuss punishment in school, which has mostly involved kids staying in for recess.
Say, we were supposed to be doing a writing assignment. One kid didn't do their best work. They would have to stay in for recess and do that writing.
Do you think that's fair?
In some ways, it can be fair because they're the ones who didn't put all their work into it. So when you look at it the way I'm looking at it, you would think it would be fair.
It's not just individuals that get punished. Sometimes, on bad days, when the whole class is chatty, all of them stay inside for recess. I asked her to describe what this is like.
The teacher has us put our heads down on the desk and just be quiet. And usually, if someone chats during that time, they'll stay in longer.
Jade's only complaint to this form of punishment is that the good students, who never talk, have to stay inside for recess as well.
Sometimes punishment, it's really strong. Like, if you're staying in for recess for, like, 2 minutes, you wouldn't really get really punishment. Punishment is, like, staying for recess for, like, 10 minutes.
I wanted to talk to her about what happens in middle school and high school and how, you know, kids get detentions for being violent towards one another or saying mean things.
Well, it's sort of surprising because you would expect a middle schooler or a high schooler to know that they should not act like that, and it's very much not appropriate to act that way. And to call people names, we all know that that's bullying and that you really shouldn't do that.
Reporting for Blunt Youth Radio, this is Iris Sangiovanni. All right. Okay. And in the time we have, we're going to be playing another piece. This is by Hassan, a resident of Long Creek Youth Development Center. So let's go ahead and listen to it.
I've always wanted a tattoo. One day I mess up.
So in my room at nighttime, I would think about what I want to do when I get out, like how I plan to get a job and go to college and have my own apartment. So I thought, is there other people like me who think about what they're going to do when they get out? So I interviewed some residents and got their plan.
What was your plan before you got out of Long Creek?
To have a job, play basketball, and go to high school.
So what went wrong when you were out?
I didn't do any of those.
Can you elaborate more?
I just didn't care. I guess I was drinking and smoking.
How's your plan going to be different this time?
I have 2 jobs. I almost got my GED, so I'm going to be more successful.
Can you elaborate more?
I'm going to have money. I'm going to have a car. I'm going to have a house.
All right, thank you. So what's your name, sir?
Moses.
So, Moses, did you get on a program before?
Yeah, I got on a program.
So, what was your plan before you got out of Long Creek?
My plan was to stay at home, go to school, do some activities, play basketball, sports, stay active, positive, stay away from negative friends, and stay on the right track.
So, what went wrong?
Negative friends. Not sticking to the plan and doing everything I was not supposed to. And I didn't have a job. And I was more free than I was in here.
What's your plan now that you've made mistakes and learned from them?
To have a job and to be more responsible and accomplish a few things, which is... I'm done with school, And I have to get myself a job and get some money.
Who will you have for support this time?
My mom. That's really it. My mom and myself to stay on track.
How do your parents feel about you coming back?
Yeah, they felt disappointed, really upset, and they felt that they failed on doing their job, and they wanted to see me be more successful. So they hope I learned my lesson this time around, and they're gonna try to be more close to me and support me when I go back out there again. They don't want to feel disappointed again. They're gonna try to support me more. Like I'm gonna get my own self a job. They're gonna try to support me by giving me the right tools to be successful, like with a car, try to help me to get a house or to get into school. Just little stuff that they can help me with.
What's gonna help you not hang out with negative peers?
To have a job, to go to school, and have that fill up my time.
Do you plan on going to college?
Yes, I'm going to college because I have my high school diploma. And I'm going to major in criminal justice and mechanical engineering. And I'm going to go to a university and hopefully get my bachelor's or even higher than that. And hopefully get a career out of that.
What job are you currently looking for?
Anything.
Even though these two residents' plan failed, they still have a chance. For Blunt Youth Radio, this is Hassan.
All right. Thank you, Hassan. So, Christine, you know, after hearing this piece and throughout the show, it seems that, you know, Long Creek is a great place to sort of, you know, get juveniles on the right path. And so how do you feel when, you know, they're sentenced to do time there?
Well, oftentimes, you know, you have to look at what the alternative is. Are they going to be in the community and continuing to fail at school, fail at certain things? And I want to kind of comment on something that you heard in that piece, which is my parents hope we learn our lesson this time. I think what we hope as a juvenile court is that they learn tools to make better decisions and to better plan for their successful future. I think we all believe that kids can be successful if they have the right tools and the right attitude.
Mm-hmm. And I'm afraid that's all the time we have for this evening. Again, I'm Iris San Giovanni. With me is
Corey, a resident from LCYDC.
We want to thank Christine Thibault, the assistant district attorney, and also Judge Keith Powers. Also to all the features played this evening, to our engineers Grayson and Jules. Tune in next week as we discuss economics. And up next is jazz.
Thank you for listening to